You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times, and I'm really pleased to have Michael Oliver with me, and I know you Michael Oliver fans out there are going to be pleased that Michael is with me for this entire segment again. A lot of you have voiced pleasure in that. The last time we had Michael on, you kind of don't want to hear what I have to say. You want to hear what Michael has to say, and that's understandable. That's why I have these great guests on. Michael is certainly one of the greatest and one of the most appreciated that we have on a regular basis. So thank you for joining me again, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
It's always good to have you with me, and I want to start out by asking you, I don't know if you heard part of my monologue, but here's the way I sort of see your view of the markets. You believe that commodity prices, the stuff, are on the rise, that will likely trigger inflation, which in turn will put pressure on the bond markets, causing interest rates to rise. And ultimately, as interest rates rise, it's going to have some adverse effect on equities. Do I have that right?
Yep, that's right.
So how are you seeing this now, and where do we stand now? Because I know you've been bearish long-term on T-bonds, but in the near term, you've not been bearish, and rightfully so. You've kind of figured that, you know, it's going to be money coming in and out of the equity market. So when there's some downward pressure on equities, it goes into bonds. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you felt that would not be the case, that we would see a real honest-to-goodness bear market in the treasuries again. So where do we stand right now, in your view?
Well, right now, it's possible you saw the high in price, the low in yield, in T-bonds and T-notes. T-bonds are 30 years, T-notes are 10, okay? They both have futures contracts. Usually when the investors talk long-term, they talk in notes. 10-year, the German bonds, for example, are 10-year. The JGBs, Japanese government bonds, are 10-year. So that's usually the maturity that investors are looking at when they talk about long-term debt. There is a 30-year T-bond future, of course. It's been around a long time. So it's even longer term. So there's a bit of difference between the two. But basically, right now, for example, if you punch up on your quote screen a chart going back at least to 2011-12 on T-note futures, you'll see that there was a major high, meaning a low in yields, that pushed prices of T-note futures up to just above 135. Mm-hmm. Then there was a big drop, and then in 2016, there was another big rise or drop in yields, rise in price, where T-notes reached over 134, not far mm-hmm. from the high that had occurred in 2012, at just mm-hmm. above 135. Well, where are we right now? We're in the high 135s. Mm. So we've had a drop, a fairly consistent, not a collapse, arm-wrestling drop for the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months or so. And everybody's now, I think there's, I'm not a contrarian, but if I were, I think right now you would have a consensus that, oh, rates are going to rise and we got to be on that train. Short the notes, short the bonds, expecting mm-hmm. higher yields. Yes, it's happening, but when you look at a price chart of the T-notes, all they've done is gently give back a small portion of a massive up move in T-note mm-hmm. prices that occurred from a low in 2018 that took them from 118 up to 140 plus. Mm-hmm. And it's taken you 6 months to give back about 5 or 6 points of that entire move, which is is to say something. You know, the clock has been working for the bears, but they haven't gained much ground, really.
Right.
And we're
mm-hmm.
sitting on top of the prior two highs. My assessment of bonds and notes is that right now, if you get short here, watch out. There could be, especially be watching the stock market, because I think what's really driving the interest rate markets now is not so much the expectation of inflation, therefore rising rates, which I think you're going to have sooner or later, mm-hmm. but is an alternative to the stock market, just mm-hmm. like it was early last year when there was a panic to buy bonds and notes in a panic to buy gold while the stock market was collapsing.
Yeah.
The stock market looks vulnerable right now. We particularly watch NASDAQ 100 and the three top stocks within it. That's Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft. And they are not doing much. They're not beating their chest anymore. They haven't for quite a while, those three stocks. So I think the leadership is trying to top out here while there's a fever in the stock market. And therefore, you've not had much demand for the notes and bonds. But I think if the stock market starts to peak here, and I suspect it's trying to, watch out for a quick snapback in price, drop in yields in T-bonds and T-notes. And that might be coincident with a sharp upturn in gold, because gold has behaved just like T-bonds and notes over the last 6 months. It's been an arm-wrestling drift to the downside. And I suspect if the stock market peaks here and heads down some, you're going to turn the bonds and notes up and gold as well. Now, ultimately, you get down further in the year, I think the issue of the inflation that we're going to see, particularly in commodity prices, is going to actually be negative for the bonds and the notes. But right now, I suspect there's one more flight to safety rally left in that market.
Well, that could would certainly seem to be the case as long as confidence is it remains in the system. I would suggest that if we start to see significant interest rate, significant commodity inflation. I don't talk about inflation. We've had inflation and massive amounts of it, I would argue, in the financial markets. But what we're talking about, and you know, they don't count that inflation in the CPI.
Yeah.
They count things with, you know, commodity prices, oil, and you know what it costs to housing and that sort of the rents and that sort of thing. When those things start to go through, if they start to rise dramatically, and do you see some potential for that? I mean, oil is up a lot.
And a lot of people who are not gold bugs, Ray Dalio, for example, one of the world's most famous hedge fund managers, has for months now said, watch out for the paradigm shift. And he says, people looking at their stocks and looking at the price of their stocks based on dollars are deluding themselves. What's happening to the dollar, not just relative to other currencies, but in terms of quantity of currency around, is so dramatic and historic that you can't trust that ruler as a yardstick anymore in terms of measuring the value of anything, hardly, because the quantity is exploding. And so, in effect, we've got hypermonetary inflation, which is going to start to show itself in various asset categories. If the stock market were at a bear market low right now, it might help the stock market. But the stock market's been in a dramatic rise for 10, 11 years. And so that's not true with stocks anymore. They're no longer a bargain like they were in 2009. Instead, commodities are the bargain. And I think guys like Ray Dalio know this, realize this, and are shifting their investment preferences accordingly. And I think that's a subtle background that's going on in the markets that not too many people are focused on.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly Dalio is, and he is also, I guess you can't call him a gold bug, but boy, he certainly does understand that gold is money and that you need to have it long term to preserve purchasing power. He gets that, that's for sure.
Yeah, but it seems to me, Michael, J.P. Morgan the other day, their research department came out and said they expect a super commodity cycle over the coming years.
Not just the next few months, coming years. Yeah.
So you've got to take that and put it into perspective when you look at your portfolio and say, where am I positioned? Because I think it's just begun. And at some point, we're going to see when the stock market wobbles, that's when you're going to have more investor focus on those alternatives that are coming up from effectively zero price levels, you know, farmland prices, grain prices, sugar, meats. They're all turning up at once. And it's because they're turning up from historically very low levels, especially in real dollar terms. And I think that's going to cause a shift. Now, ultimately, that's going to hurt the bonds. But right now, I still think the bonds and the notes will be, one more time, at some point here, a flight to safety vehicle for investors.
Yeah, it seems to be the natural thing. Again, until that paradigm shift that Dalio talks about, if we start to see... I mean, if you start to see inflation starting to rise dramatically, the Fed, what's the Fed going to do? The United States is running
the stock
these huge.
Huh?
What's that?
Especially if the stock market's weak. How can they possibly want to raise rates against inflation if it's going to hurt their stock market?
Well, that leads me
to.
That leads me to a question, Michael. In terms of the Fed's omnipotence, can it raise rates indefinitely? I mean, does it have control of rates is what I'm getting at. I know you're
probably
a believer
not.
In the markets. You believe in the power of the markets ultimately. The
right.
Politicians can play games. Central bankers can manipulate markets to a certain extent. But ultimately, you know, it's the rules of nature, the laws of nature that come into play, right?
Correct, and I think that ultimately those are reflected through individual actions, investor mm-hmm. actions. Investors collectively put together in a fund, for example. I mean, finally, that can change. And I think they've put us in a position now, the central banks of the Western world in particular, where pricing of certain assets is way out of line with reality. It's been way out of line for a long time, and therefore when it snaps, it's likely to, the repercussions are likely to be equal and opposite the other way in terms of excess. And I think the U.S. stock market in particular is an asset category that a lot of people think, well, the Fed's in charge and this is going to take it up forever. Well, there's a point at which that rubber band snaps and the money flows go elsewhere. It happened in the late 70s. Stock market was
for
a
sure.
plan for,
yeah, you know. Absolutely. I remember it well. I'm old enough to remember it well. And I'm wondering if we're not going to see perhaps the same kind of stagflation event that we saw then, where
even worse.
But of course, even worse. But now the problem is you can't raise rates to 17% like Volcker did. Then it's game over. Then if that happens, isn't it? Some sort of a currency reset,
right? And it's a crisis of crises, I think. And I think ultimately, when this one's over, a lot of things will be reset in such a drastic and fundamental way that reality will have changed. For most investors, most policymakers, et cetera. And that's fine. You know, we're back to reality again, and I think it's coming. And I think the explosion we're seeing in commodities is the beginning phase of that.
Yeah, the reality will be forced on the politicians. Just because you want something doesn't make it so. And anyway, I just with a couple of minutes left here yet, Michael, I want to ask you about gold. Where do you see it now, technically, from your momentum and structural analyses?
There's no way we can be bearish, step one, long term. Okay. We've noted that in the past, whatever gold took out a prior major bull market peak, for instance, it peaked at 200 in 1975. Well, in 1978, it came back up and took out that high. If you bought gold taking out the old 1975 price high, in effect, you were a sucker. You should have bought it before then. And what did they do for about two or three quarters? Gold flip-flopped around before it fully engaged to the upside again. The same thing happened in 1980. It made a peak at 850, 875. And then later, a couple decades later, you took that out. But what happened once you took it out? You went a little bit further, but then you thrashed around for several quarters before you finally engaged big time to the upside in gold and got to 1900. Same story now. We took out the 1900 high, or it was a monthly high in 2011, about 1830, I think it was. We've taken that out last summer, and what have we done since? Flip-flopped around with a slight downside bias, just like T-bonds have done, by the way, a downside bias for the last 6 months. But it's not precipitous. It's arm wrestling type selling. It's redundant. You sell off, make a new low for the sell off. You rally, then you come back down. The issue now on gold is: will you take out the November low, which was 1760 and change, or is this a teaser sell off that is going to try to? But if it doesn't take it out very soon on the downside, then I think this thing could flip back up. And our key numbers are in the mid 1800s, like 1850 plus. At that point, we think the arm wrestling match of the last 6-7 months is over, upside resuming. Watch silver also. It wants to launch, but it's not going to do it until gold says, okay, I'm through with the arm wrestling match. I'm ready to go back up. As soon as silver senses that gold is through with the corrective process, I think silver is going to be a lightning bolt, and it's the better place to be.
Yeah, it's silver for sure. I'm hearing horror stories about shortages, physical shortages, not just for coins, silver coins, but for 1,000-ounce bars and so forth.
Right.
And now I'm just reading just a note from my wife here talking about the silver. She says the Silver Exchange Traded Funded SLV appears to have just amended its prospectus to acknowledge difficulty in sourcing metal for the fund, end of quote. So, yep. You know, I think that
that's
politicians...
Why gold's down 1.5% today and silver's up a bit.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but, you know, like silver saying, you know, get your act over with. I'm ready to go.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, Michael, we ask the big banks, they play the futures markets. They're in the paper markets, massive amounts of paper. They sell down these metals. I asked this last week, I asked a dealer that I have high regard for, what silver price he thought it would take to clear the market so he doesn't have to wait 2 weeks or 2 months to get a delivery of silver. He said he thinks if we saw $50 silver, we'd see some pride loose. We'd see some silver pride. He said that whenever the markets get slammed, people are not selling their physical. They're not selling their physical. They're buying more. So it's really a fascinating time, I think, for the metals. And, boy, if there was ever a time in my career that I think we've had wind at our backs as precious metals investors, I think it's now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. The only issue is, can they take out that November low and get some kind of further panic sell-off in gold briefly? And I think it will be brief. Or is this the last attempt that we're seeing right now? And if it fails very soon, I think within days, if you're not through that November low, I think they could flip it back up pretty good. And if you get back up into the mid-1800s, which is the highs of the last 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, have been 1850 area, so forth. I think you get back up there one more time, they're going to launch it. But again, gold is the mama, but it's not necessarily the place to be. I think silver's the place to be, percent-wise.
Right. Yeah, it sure seems that way. Well, thank you very much, Michael, for being with us again, sharing your thoughts. Very valuable. Always great to have you here with us, and we'll look to do it again in a couple of weeks from now, I hope.
Good.
All right.
Thank you, Jay.
All right, you bet. Folks, we're going to break now, but don't go away. Lynn Alden will be with me. She's going to talk about interest rates' effects on equities and some of her thoughts about the markets as well. So we'll be right back with Lynn Alden.
Voice America is available on your Google connected device.
Okay, Google, play Turning Hard Times into Good Times podcast on iHeartRadio.
Try it today.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSXV and GTBAF on the OTCQX, is a gold exploration company focused on their district-scale Dixie Project in the renowned Red Lake Mining District of Ontario. Having made multiple high-grade near-surface gold discoveries, GBR's capital efficiency has allowed them to be fully funded to complete a very active 300,000-meter drill program through 2021. Stay up to date on what's been considered one of the best-performing exploration stocks in the last 3 years by visiting greatbearresources.ca.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.